Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual today. And, Jim, usually the Sunday shows have high-profile guests, and they say some relatively interesting things. We got a couple of gems today in both the good and bad martinis, both from Democrats. We start with the good martini, and oddly enough, it comes from Nancy Pelosi, who was grilled pretty well, I thought, yesterday by David Gregory over at Meet the Press. Interestingly, though, after all of her assurances that regardless of the debacle that's going on with the rollout of Obamacare, it's all good, you know, pre-existing conditions, so everything's going to be fine. And then the last takeaway question, here's David Gregory asking her about the political impact of all this.
Democrats won't lose seats next year over Obamacare?
I don't think you can tell what will happen next year, but I will tell you this. Democrats stand tall in support of the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. We have great candidates who are running, who are concerned about our economy and are concerned that the government was shut down because of a whim on the part of the Republicans.
This is a winning issue for us, Jim, so we're going to do everything we can to distract you from it until Election Day next year.
You know, Greg, we shouldn't be surprised that Nancy Pelosi gives an unconvincing, stiff, rote, scrambling answer, because that's kind of her standard operating procedure for most questions put before her. Having said that, this is a very difficult spot she's in, because Obamacare is an absolute disaster, and she basically has to pretend that sometime in the future, the real crazy optimists think, presto changeo, the website's going to be working by the end of the month. Anybody who knows anything about programming knows that's pretty darn unlikely. They have to assume that at some point this stops being a liability for them, and their only thing is to, you know, I guess pray, although they took God out of the party platform last time. She's got to basically say, well, at some point it's going to be not so bad and we can run on this. And when she says Democrats are going to stand tall for their vote for Obamacare, I hope they do that all the way through to when they get voted out of office in November. I suppose you could argue that the Democratic Party is so symbiotically attached to Obamacare right now that they cannot extricate themselves from it. They certainly can't, you know, like her claim at the end is going to be about jobs. Well, gee, when the employer mandate is kicking in and employers are dropping their employees' health plans and saying, well, go buy stuff on that fantastic exchange the administration keeps talking about. We'll pay the fine. It's cheaper. Unsurprisingly, people will feel great frustration about their jobs and great anxiety about their prospects of going out and getting a better job and things like that. So it's all bad news for Nancy Pelosi, her inability to do anything other than to just insist things will get better. They have to get better between now and November is probably a good indicator of the desperation going on their side right now.
It's funny to watch the Democrats, I think, Jim, transition from the theoretical debate to the debacle because they can't make the leap. And Pelosi's obviously not the most articulate spokesperson for their side, but they're still just hanging their hats on pre-existing condition non-discrimination. It's the only thing, and kids on their parents' health insurance till 26. Meanwhile, they're ignoring the bonfire over here that's consuming so many other things.
By the way, completely unmentioned from the very beginning of this, Greg, was if you're a child who's, you know, out of college, say you're 21, 22, and you're, you know, you can't find a job, period, but you certainly can't find a job with health insurance, you can go on your parents' plan or you can stay on your parents' plan, but the insurance company can still charge more, right?
Right.
And so one of those things was, you know, the entire time your kids, you know, stay on your parents' plan until 26, they don't mention that mom and dad will be, you know, footing the bill for you. And mom and dad may at some point not like the size of their premiums with their children on their plan. And so kind of this is one more aspect in which Obamacare had to be sold as all upside, no downside. And if President Obama had gone to college campuses and say, well, the good news is we're going to be able to let you stay on your parents' plan until age 26 if mom and dad can afford it. And, you know, all of a sudden those crowds might not have been quite so cheering and happy to see the president back then. So the brutal truths of Obamacare continue to pile up like a, well, train wreck, Greg.
All right, on to the bad martini now and over to ABC's This Week program. Martha Raddatz was filling in for George Stephanopoulos, and her guest was New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. And like many journalists interviewing lawmakers who were in office during the original Obamacare debate, the issue came up, you know, did the president mislead you? Did you mislead others? And here's how that exchange went on ABC.
Did you feel misled by Obama?
He should have just been more specific, because the point is, if you're being offered a terrible health care plan that the minute you get sick, you're going to have to go into bankruptcy, those plans should never be offered.
So were you misled?
He should have just been specific. No, we all knew. The whole point of the plan is to cover things people need, like preventive care, birth control, pregnancy. How many women, the minute they get pregnant, might have risked their coverage? How many women paid more because of their gender, because they might get pregnant?
We all knew the whole point of the plan was to essentially decide for you what needs to be in your insurance plan, and therefore dictating the price. And of course, then the obfuscation goes to the war on women.
Three huge lies in a very short span there from the senator. One, the issue is not that President Obama wasn't specific enough. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan, period. That's not general. That's not vague. In fact, the problem is that it's crystal clear. And people have a very plain meaning of those words. If you like your plan, you can keep it. Now, one of the things that's kind of worth noting as we go forward in this debate, and the Republicans ought to keep in mind, look, we are completely right to take the Democrats and just, you know, rub their faces in the fact that they lied through their teeth. The entire selling point of this legislation was a giant ruse, because if people knew the truth, people never would have supported it. That's cool. We should point out, though, the Republican viewpoint should not be that no one who likes their plan should ever lose their plan, because accurately, plans do get canceled all the time. These things are not written in stone. What we ought to be saying is that, yeah, everybody ought to be able to get a good plan when they want to, and that if you have a reform, you shouldn't lie to do it. Gillibrand is just continuing, because then she goes on to say it's a terrible plan. Tell that to Kirsten Powers. Tell that to, you know, all kinds of folks who did like their plan. Basically, this message, and we've seen this from the Democrats in recent weeks, is, look, American people, you're too stupid to know what a good plan is. We smart people in government who don't have our plans at risk in this process will tell you what a good plan is. And so this one that's a lot more expensive that you had previously decided you couldn't afford, we are going to make you buy that. Because we know better than you, and you have to just live with it because, you know, we are the imperial elite class who know what we're doing. And then the third one, we all knew, well, that's just flat out not true. Otherwise, nobody would be upset about it right now, you know, Senator Gillibrand. So it really is kind of instructive about politicians, and I think, you know, liberal Democrats in particular, but I think the temptation is all across the board in politics, that when confronted with difficult facts, most folks just like to pretend they don't exist. And so Kirsten Gillibrand will pretend that everybody always knew, oh, the plans are going to go away and it doesn't matter because all the plans are terrible. And it was just a lack of specific, it just pile lie upon lie upon lie. And you hope you get through the interview without any ABC anchor reaching across the desk and throttling her and saying, what the heck is wrong with you? Why do you keep lying to us?
All right, on to martini number three now. And as we discussed at length at the end of last week, and as the president outlined on Thursday, as a result of all of this blowing up in his face, he is now allowing, if the insurance carriers and state insurance commissioners allow it, for folks to keep their existing plans for 1 year. He's essentially mandating that the states and the insurance companies resurrect them and turn them around and enroll people in about 6 weeks so they can have coverage at the start of the year, something that this plan couldn't do in 3.5 years. And so various state insurance commissioners are trying to figure out whether this is even feasible, and it's really not even breaking down along party lines. Some Democrats are saying, look, this is just not doable. But that also has consequences. This from Fox News. The District of Columbia's insurance commissioner says he was fired after questioning President Obama's plan to fix Obamacare and saying the city might not follow his suggestions. Commissioner William White told the Washington Post on Saturday that he was called into Mayor Vincent Gray's office the prior day and told the Democratic mayor wants to go in a different direction. Some of the top reasons for the commissioner's objections are policy prices are already locked in to comply with changes in Obamacare. An extension could conflict with state-level laws to comply with the law, and younger Americans needed to join the federal exchange to keep costs down. We'll wait to enroll. So good reasons, I think, that most people would consider valid reasons, but apparently in some places, like the very liberal Washington, D.C., disagreeing with the president is just a mortal sin.
A bridge too far, isn't it, Greg? Yeah, I mean, this is probably a fantastic example of how the liberal philosophy and the democratic approach to life and this cognitive dissonance I was describing with Kirsten Gillibrand, that, you know, when things are bad, deny them. The president has put out this ad hoc, hastily improvised solution, which was, hey, remember all those plans the law required you to cancel? Never mind. And if you can get them back up and running within a couple of weeks, you can offer them again if state insurance commissioners say it's hunky-dory. This is a District of Columbia insurance commissioner who just looked at it. Well, if you do this, people don't get into the exchanges. And remember, you need a certain mix of people in the exchanges. You need young and healthy people as well as old and sick people. He doesn't even say definitely that they won't do it, although his statement certainly expresses skepticism of saying that this may be, considering the amount of time that's left before the deadlines kick in, logistically impossible or near impossible. And the second thing is that if you do this, you take the young, healthy people out of the exchanges. And within a year or two, Obamacare is crashing because the health insurance companies have been saddled with a lot of old and sick people and not enough young, healthy people to pay those premiums. For acknowledging this truth, this D.C. insurance commissioner has committed a thought crime. And he cannot work in the administration of Vincent Gray, which has so far been one of the most ludicrously corrupt and incompetent administrations that has been yearning for the good old days of Marion Barry. Greg, I don't know about you. I want Mayor Ford up in Toronto to come over down to D.C. because he at least he's entertaining. You know, he may be every bit as much of a basket case as Gray's administration has been. But at least if you're going to have an absolute mess running a city into the ground, at the very least, you know, have an entertaining one. That would be an upgrade for Washington, D.C. after this latest news.
Amazing. Amazing and an appropriate crazy end to our discussion today. Jim, I know you're off for the next couple of days. We'll talk to you later in the week.
I am. Greetings to all the Boston area NR readers. I will see you at our NR event in Boston later this week, and I will see you Friday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be back on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.